We invite you to write a question and post it on Facebook or send it via email this hour to our guest writing coach. And she will provide us tips on how to write anything. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Despite our digital age with texting and email, our guest says writing skills are as important as ever. And yet many of us struggle with it. The best way to write invitations, thank you notes, cover letters, research papers, and everything else. You might have some examples of good or not so good writing from Facebook, job applications, sales pitches. Maybe you have some questions for our guest. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Laura Brown is a writer and writing coach and author of How to Write Anything, A Complete Guide. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on, Joy.
So why is writing so important?
Well, I think there are a couple of reasons. I think a part of it has to do with the Internet, that the Internet has enabled us to work in different ways. So I think a lot of times people interact at work in writing, whereas in the past they would have done it via a phone call or maybe a face-to-face meeting. The email has surpassed the phone call as the most common form of business communication. A lot of companies do virtual teaming, so you may be working with somebody halfway around the world and never ever see them, and most of your interaction will be through writing. I think also college admissions have become a lot more competitive, and writing is really a critical part of getting into college and succeeding in college.
I never thought of that. The digital age, the Internet age, has made writing more important, not less important.
Well, it's kind of funny because I remember when the Internet started, some people were saying, oh, that's it, you know, writing skills are going to, you know, not be important anymore. The fact is that because of the Internet, we're writing more now than ever before.
Yeah, that's interesting. So is our writing more casual now in the digital age?
I think it is. I think it's... I don't know how old you are, but certainly when I made the transition from college to the work world, there was a genre called business writing that we had to learn because it was completely different from anything else we had done in school. There were business letters, there was a form called a memo that everyone had to learn how to do, and they were quite formal. I think what's happened is that it's become a little more democratized now so that the email style that you might use with your friends has spilled over into the work world. And to some extent, that's fine if it's efficient and if it's appropriate. There's still room for the formal business letter, but it's much less common than it used to be.
I'm only 29, by the way.
Okay, me too.
Is it okay just to say thanks for the flowers in a post on Facebook or in an email?
I think it depends on the occasion, and I think it depends on your relationship. I am a big advocate of the actual handwritten thank you note. It happens a lot less frequently than it used to, but I think that that's one of the reasons that it's so special. You can really make yourself sort of stand out from the crowd. It depends on the gift, really, what form a thank you note should take. You never, ever go wrong with a handwritten thank you note. If somebody gives you a really substantial gift, then you really must send a handwritten thank you note. An email simply won't do.
Yeah. A lot of us don't consider ourselves natural writers. Can we really write anything?
Yes. I think that's one of the biggest obstacles people encounter is this idea that there's such a thing as a natural writer, and some people are good at it, and if you're not good at it, well, then forget it. And certainly some people are good at it, sort of right off the bat. But anybody really can learn to write anything. One of the things I talk about in my book is the way writing is often taught is a linear process. You consider your purpose, you consider your reader, you brainstorm ideas, you write an outline, you write a draft, and then you revise what you've written. I was teaching one night at Columbia University. I was teaching an adult ed class for students who were coming back to school after having been in the workforce. So I set out to teach this step-by-step method, and I turned to them and I said, look, I know you guys aren't going to do this, but I just want to show it to you.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I thought, wait a minute. Wait a minute. So the linear process works for some people, but it doesn't work for a lot of people. And the more I thought about it, the more I realized, well, I don't even use it. When I have to write something, I usually sit down and just start writing a draft. I start writing in the middle, wherever I'm comfortable, and then I go back and think more, you know, about organization, about do I need additional content. I think if people can learn to write in the way that's comfortable for them, then they can really release their own natural talent. I really think if you can talk, you can write.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just really a matter of learning what works best for you, and then also of realizing it isn't easy. You know, if it doesn't come out perfect the first time, that doesn't mean you're a bad writer. It just means you need to work at it a little bit.
Yeah. Well, that's what I think I tend to do is I start with a draft and I go back and I fix it and I change it and I might start over. That can take a really long time, though, but that's the way it is?
Well, I think it really depends on what works for you, and mm-hmm. I think it's worth experimenting. If that's the way you do it, and if that's the way you're comfortable and successful doing it, then, you know, don't change anything. If you feel like it's taking too long, then I would suggest maybe try starting with an outline and see how that works for you.
Well, you did outline a process that we might consider following, which starts with figure out your purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that. How do we do that?
It's a step that an amazing number of people skip.
Mm-hmm.
And a good example, I think, is a cover letter for a resume. We all know that we need them, and most of us don't know what to say in a resume cover letter. I'm like, here's my resume. And,
mm-hmm.
and then the impulse is to sort of repeat the information that's on the resume. But this is an example where it's really helpful to think carefully about your purpose. What are you trying to do? What are you trying to achieve with that cover letter? What you're really trying to get is for your reader to look at the resume and call you in for an interview.
Right.
So once you focus on that purpose, then you can start thinking, all right, so what do I need to say? What do I need to point to on the resume to make this person think, hey, I should interview you?
Yeah, so you... You wouldn't necessarily just write down everything you've done on that cover letter, but, you know, as you'll note, when I was the director of administration, I did XYZ. I mean, you mention your experience in that cover letter?
What you want to do is point to the information on the resume that you think makes you a good candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I did exactly this same job for your biggest competitor.
Right.
I did something similar, or I have transferable skills. It's an opportunity to be a little bit analytical, which you can't really be in a resume. You just have to present the information in the resume. But in the cover letter, you can think about it and say, well, this is what this information means to you. This is what it means about me as a job applicant.
And it's different if you have a different purpose if you want to write a thank you note or a condolence letter.
Yes.
So you just start with what exactly is your purpose. And then it says you suggest we identify and understand the reader.
Mm-hmm.
Like what?
I think too often we sit down and write what we want to say rather than thinking about what the reader needs. So, for example, if you're writing at work, if you're trying to get authorization for a purchase at work, you really need to put yourself in the reader's shoes and think, well, why is my reader going to think this is a priority? Right? Why would this reader give me budget for this project? What does the reader expect? What might the reader, how might the reader object to what I'm asking for? And if you can do that, then you can tailor your content in a way that's more appealing to the reader.
So you could say, well, you might think this costs too much. It will actually save us money, yada, yada.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. That way you anticipate objections and you sort of dispose of them.
Yeah. When you talk about you should consider attitude, what does that mean when you're understanding your reader?
Attitude has to do with how is my reader likely to react to this?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, a clear example is if you're asking for budget for something. And that it really comes into play largely in requests.
Yeah.
How is my reader likely to respond? You know, I think another example would be a workplace apology. Those are very difficult. They can be very difficult, but they're very important for smoothing over problems in relationships. That's where you really need to think, well, how did my action affect the person that I'm writing to, and what is their attitude likely to be towards my apology? Then you can sort of shape what you write according to that.
We are talking about how to write anything with our guest, Laura Brown. She's a writer and a writing coach. And we wonder if you need any tips on how to write just the right thing for a given situation. I'm not sure how. How do you? What is the process you use when you sit down to write something? Do you have some examples of good or not so good writing? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. From cover letters to thank you notes to research papers, knowing what to write and how to write it can be difficult, but we are getting some help this hour from our guest writing coach. She is the author of How to Write Anything, a complete guide. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. You can also tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We had a caller, Mary in St. Charles, Illinois, who wanted to ask advice on how to write a complaint letter, such as disputing a claim or a bill with a company. She had a specific issue in mind, but generally speaking, Laura Brown, can you give us some advice on what we might write, what's important in writing this letter and trying to settle a disagreement with a company?
Sure. Complaint letters are hard, obviously, because you're unhappy when you're writing one, and you might be upset or angry. So that's one thing that makes them difficult. What I usually do when I have to write a complaint letter is I write everything out. I'll just write it all out, everything that happened, and then go back and revise it and really think about a couple of things. What is the key problem? What's the key complaint that you're making, and what remedy are you asking for?
Mm-hmm.
The person who reads the complaint letter is probably not the person who's caused your problem, so venting your anger on that person can be counterproductive, and it certainly, you know, ruins their day. So, and it doesn't help solve the problem. So I think the thing is really to focus very closely on what's the meat of what happened? What is the core of the problem? And then what remedy are you asking for? So what I do is once I've written everything out, I bring those two things right up to the top. If you're sending an email or sending a letter, state, you know, to whom it may concern, I'm writing to complain about this event that happened on this date, get the specifics, and then at the end of the first paragraph, I'm requesting X, Y, and Z as a solution. And then if you need to go further into explaining what happened, what the problem was, do that in the middle of the complaint, and then at the end, restate what you're asking for.
Yeah, and that's that right away, figure out your purpose, one of your first outline points. That's what you're doing there. You're saying, bought a product so-and-so at your store, and it doesn't work, and I would like a refund.
Yeah, exactly. I'd like a refund. I'd like a replacement. I'd like a coupon. Whatever it is you want that you think is appropriate, put that right up front and then restate it at the end. Yeah, working on your purpose, focusing on your purpose is especially important with anything where you feel emotional, you feel like something has gone wrong. That can really help you focus your writing.
Yeah. Is getting right to the point appropriate for all forms of writing?
Well, that's an interesting question. Pretty much, yes. The one exception I'm thinking of is the letter, the bad news letter. They always say a good news letter, you should format with the good news right up front. The bad news letter or email, you should cushion a little bit. So if you've interviewed someone for a job, for example, you don't want your first sentence in that communication to be, oh, you didn't get the job.
Yes. Yeah, so that would be, we had many wonderful applicants and you were one of them, but somebody else was more suited for the job.
Exactly. And that's just a kindness and a courtesy, and you don't want to go overboard with that because they're going to end up thinking, oh, I got the job, or wondering, yeah, well, if I'm so great, why didn't I get the job? But just a couple of lines thanking the person for coming in and saying you enjoyed meeting them, to cushion the bad news a little bit.
What if the job applicant was not a wonderful job applicant?
Yeah, that's difficult. Then you thank them for their time.
Yeah. You don't have to point out, you know, what are you thinking? Why did you even apply?
No, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that because, you know, that person might come back and be very well qualified for another job in your organization, or they might, you know, say to their friends, oh, look, I got this really rude letter. So, you always want to maintain goodwill, even if the news is bad.
Yeah. Let's go to Pat in Cumberland. Hello, Pat.
Hi.
Hi, Pat.
Hi there.
Go ahead, Pat. Yes, we can, Pat. Go ahead with what your story is.
Oh, well, it's a simple story. Anyway, I've been writing Christmas letters since 2000, and I think what it's ended up being is more like a family history, so I can go back and see who died and when they died and blah, 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 who was born when. But I think the challenge I've always found is getting it started. And so I have found that no matter what I think about, it's going to take probably at least 100 redrafts before I get it right. And it seems funny because at some time when I've read it, I finally recognize that it's okay. It's going to be a good letter now. So, and I do think that the computer has been such a wonderful piece of equipment. The technology allows you to save your drafts and then go back in and change them and change them and change them. And well, that's my story.
Oh no, I'm glad you shared it. So, how do you go through the process of deciding what's the most important family news to share in your Christmas letter, Pat?
Well, I try to keep it interesting. So, this last year, I did what I call a seasonal letter and talked about how the landscape and the environment affects what we do and the challenges we face, and then I think the year before I organized it by months. Sometimes I organize it by people, animals, blah blah blah,
categories,
kind of
categories,
and so I think it works for me at least.
Those sound wonderful. Those sound wonderful. I'd love to see those, actually.
Would you? Oh, I'd love to. I've got them all on my computer since 2000, and I won't send all. I'm sure you don't have time to read all that, but I'd be happy to send you a few samples at least.
I would really love to see them. You can send them to me, if you would, through my website, howtowriteanything.com.
Oh, wait a minute. I'll write that down.
Okay. It's How to Write Anything, which is the title of my book, howtowriteanything.com. I'm really interested in this because I have a section in the book about how to write a holiday family newsletter. And so many of them end up as being, you know, just sort of bragging about what the kids did this year. And I was really taken with what you just said about wanting to make them interesting, which is really thinking about your reader, right? What the impact is going to be on your reader. Those sound just lovely.
Yeah. We will be sure, if we haven't already, to put a link to your website, howtowriteanything.com, on our website and our Facebook page, the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page as well. So the holiday letter is still with us. We like holiday letters still. Do you think, Laura?
I do. I think it depends on how they're done. I think that they can be done in a way that's tedious and boring and doesn't take into account what the reader is interested in. But I think they can be lovely.
Yeah. Going back to your outline, this process that you suggest we follow. So we figure out our purpose. That's the first thing, and it's to, I guess, you know, inform the family of things going on in your life over the past year. Understand and identify your reader. Okay, it's family members who presumably are interested in what happens to me.
Right.
Your next step is brainstorm your ideas. So this is sort of where Pat was saying, well, sometimes she does categories, sometimes she does it chronologically, you know, tries to come up with interesting ideas. So is that what you mean by brainstorm your ideas?
It can be. I really like Pat's process, because she is obviously very thoughtful about it. Some families will do a paragraph for each child,
mm-hmm.
Something that can be fun is to have the child write their own paragraph. What happened this year? What was fun? What was important to you? And then sort of a general wrap up about what the whole family is doing. But again, you can tip very easily into the realm of either being boastful or being boring. So
mm-hmm.
Keep it concise, keep it interesting. If you can make it a little bit funny, then it's that much more enjoyable.
Rich on Facebook says he's been writing letters to elderly friends. Oh, I'm sorry, an elderly friend who recently suffered a stroke and who can read but not speak. He says, I have found myself focusing on my own life in my letters to him, recounting what is happening around me. But while I am told that these messages are appreciated, I am sort of running out of ideas about what to talk about in these letters to him. Do you have any suggestions?
That's a lovely thing to do.
Mm-hmm. He's running out of, developments in his own life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wonder, you know, just because the friend who had a stroke can't speak doesn't mean that friend can't write. You could ask questions that could be...
That's what I'm wondering about. That's mm-hmm. what I'm wondering about, because I think it would be very interesting to ask questions about his friend's life and then to respond to how his friend responds, the mm-hmm. letters that he gets back. If that's not the case, then I would borrow a page from Pat's book. She talked about writing about seasons. You can write about... Writing about the weather is sort of a cliche, but if you take it a little farther, you can describe what's going on around you. You can describe what's blooming. You can describe the snow. You can also talk about memories, right? You can talk about important memories to you. He says he's giving updates about what's going on in his life. But maybe go back a little bit and talk about things that were important in the past.
Yeah.
It's also a good opportunity. As Pat said, it creates sort of a journal, a yearly journal, and letters do that.
You know, I'm wondering if you have any advice. It just reminded me of a friend. It's actually a relative of a very close friend, but I know this person, too, who's suffering from a very, very terminal cancer. And it was this person's birthday just recently. And it's, you know, it's you can have a card that says happy birthday, but it just doesn't seem enough. I mean, would you recommend writing more than that in this situation?
Yeah, I would. That's a little bit delicate. Mm-hmm. If it's acknowledged that a person is going to pass away soon, and if the person is comfortable with people discussing that, I have in the past actually written to friends who I knew were not going to be with us very much longer, and just let them know what they meant to me. People very often don't realize the impact that they have on your life. So even just being able to relate a little anecdote about an experience that you shared together that meant a lot to you, and maybe the reader doesn't know it meant a lot to you. But as I say, it depends on how comfortable they are with discussing the situation. If they're not, then then I think sort of a chatty letter is something that can cheer people up.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about sympathy cards. What general tips do you have when it comes to writing a sympathy note?
Well, this is a place where it really helps to think about your purpose, because sympathy notes are very difficult to write. And I think one of the reasons that they're so difficult is that people feel somehow deep down, I'm supposed to say the right thing. I'm supposed to figure out the right thing to say to make it all better. And that's impossible, right? You've just set a purpose for yourself that's not possible. So if you think, well, what does this reader need at this point, then you're very well able to supply that. You don't have to sound like a Hallmark card. Really just speak from your own heart, speak in your own voice, and just let them know what you can let them know. I'm very sorry. I'm thinking of you. I want you to know I'm thinking of you. If you pray, I'm praying for you. If you're able to extend this offer, let me know what I can do to help, or suggest something that you would like to do to help. Another thing that's really nice is the idea I was talking about just a second ago of relating an anecdote of an experience that you had with the person who's deceased. That's really, really a gift to one of the survivors, because it's very often just a little incident that they've never heard of. I remember when my father passed away, one of the men he worked with came to me and told me some stories about Daddy, and I have never forgotten them, and they were just silly, silly everyday things. But they were funny, and it was lovely. So that's the kind of thing you can do in a sympathy note that's really just straight from the heart and will be appreciated a lot.
Yeah. One of your final steps of this process in the revisions you might make in what you're writing is to enlist help. Sometimes it does help to have someone else look at it and make a suggestion, yes or no?
Oh, it really does. Mm-hmm. It really does. It usually adds a little time to the process, but it's just invaluable to have someone read over your draft and with a fresh eye and give you their impressions. It can be especially helpful if you ask them to look for specific things. Is there any content missing? Oh, do you think my tone is okay? I always recommend that, no matter what you're writing.
Yeah. And taking a break, I actually enjoy doing this. It does lengthen the process a little bit, but just to step away for a while, and when you look back at it with fresh eyes, you can maybe spot something you didn't think of before.
It's really true. It's hard to proofread and edit your own writing, but that's one of the key tricks, is to let it rest. And I know that we're all writing in a big hurry at work. But even if you can step away from your draft for an hour or so, do something else, get your head some other place, and then come back and look at it with fresh eyes, that really does help a lot. You'll see, oh, I don't even need this sentence, or, ooh, I left out something really important.
Yeah. Isn't it funny how our brain works, though? Sometimes we'll have a missing word, but yet we will, you know, when we're just glancing at it, we'll see the word because our mind puts it in there, I think.
Oh, it's so scary.
No. So it's like, oh my gosh, I forgot the, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You know, one of the scariest things about writing this book, about writing, was that there would be missing words, and mm-hmm. That I would have a lot of errors in the sections where I tell people to proofread.
But good thing you had a good proofreader, huh?
Yeah, a wonderful, wonderful copy editor. But you know, it happened to me. I recently put up a blog on the Huffington Post, and there was a word missing. And bet, one of the HuffPost readers caught it. You know, that's what they do.
Well, you know, yeah, and they can be unforgiving. But you know what? You do see with all the stuff on social media and Facebook, you do see a lot of grammatical errors and you know, inappropriate words and I mean, it almost sometimes you have to shake your head. Do you?
Yes, yes, yes. Well, see, this is part of what I mean by we're all writing so much more.
Mm-hmm.
That you may not, 25 years ago, you might not have known that your friend couldn't spell.
Right.
Now you know. So, yeah, there's a lot of it, and I think a lot of it is just speed. I mean, you see a lot of errors even on, you know, the websites of major news organizations because everybody's just running so fast.
Yeah.
The other thing is, and, you know, to give people a break, we are all going fast. And, you know, I'm very strict with myself, and I have a PhD in English, and I go back and I look at my drafts that are written very fast, and I will use there, and there wrong occasionally. And I know the difference.
You know, that's funny. I wrote, "You're the best," or something. And just in my haste, I did not make it the contraction, "You are."
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I can't believe I did that. And I'm luckily you can edit it now. But if you can't edit that kind of stuff, you look pretty silly.
I'm glad to hear you say that because mm-hmm. I was really shocked at myself when I started doing that. But it's just speed, you mm-hmm. know, it's just speed.
But on the other hand, it's not speed and you're making these kinds of errors and you do look foolish if it's consistent.
Yeah, you do. You mm-hmm. do. And it's, you know, it's just a question of learning it. You just have to learn it and remember it. I have some downloads on my website, howtowriteanything.com, about commonly confused words and words that are commonly misspelled. Those are free, and I encourage people to go download them and study them because some of them you just have to memorize, you know. And once you memorize it, you know it, and you never make that mistake again, and you never look silly again.
I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Laura Brown. She's a writer and a writing coach, and she is author of How to Write Anything, A Complete Guide. And we are getting some tips on how to write anything, from condolence letters to research papers to cover letters. Maybe you have a question. Maybe you have a tip yourself. Maybe you have an example of good or not so good writing. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Laura Brown, author of How to Write Anything, A Complete Guide. And we're welcoming your questions or your ideas at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Do want to get to the phones, Laura, but a lot of the writing we do these days is via email or it's posting on social media, and it doesn't allow a lot of time to go through a six-step process. What advice do you have for writing well but quickly?
I think this is where you really need to consider your purpose and your reader. If you have just a few seconds to get something, to get an email off, really stop and think, why am I doing this, and what does my reader need? Mm-hmm. And you can catch yourself from sending a bunch of irrelevant information or missing the point. I know everybody's going really fast. So those two things can really, really make your writing more productive.
To the phones again, Fred in Palmyra is with us. Hello, Fred.
Hi, Fred.
Hey, good morning. By the time I got through the screener, you guys had already switched from just letter writing to condolence and letters.
We're talking about everything and anything, Fred.
I always sit down and use a pencil, and I write everything out longhand, and I work through the problems that way. But for just writing a letter to a friend or a relative, I will start it out with a poem that I've selected from a book of poetry that might relate to the weather, it might relate to the season, it might relate to whatever subject that might pop into my head. But it makes it, you know, if you don't make the poem too darn long, no more than half a page. And usually it gets the mind warmed up, and you can just take off from there. And I always write with a manual or an electric typewriter. I don't use the email media. It's difficult for me.
So, Fred, you're the one who uses a typewriter still. I'm just kidding. I'm just teasing, Fred. I think that's sweet. You know, in thinking of that poem, that's something that our emailer who wants to write to his friend who suffered a stroke, that might be a nice thing too.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing. That's a lovely idea. My aunt used to do that, Fred. My aunt used to send poems and then follow them up with a letter. I think that's lovely. I think that's lovely. The people who get those letters from you are lucky. And I'll bet they're saving them.
Yeah.
I'll bet they're saving them.
Yeah, isn't it something, though, that while writing has not gone by the wayside, we still do cherish it when we receive a written letter or thank you note?
Yes. I recently came across some letters that my father had written home when he was 15. He was sent to military school. He was born and raised in China, and so he was writing back from California to his family in China. And it was about 6 months' worth of letters. And, what do you know about your dad when he was 15? Right?
Mm-hmm.
It was just so wonderful to see who he was as a kid. And this was in the 30s, and he was saving up money to buy a radio. And it was just lovely. So I always encourage people to save things because they really are just a glimpse of your life. I save emails, in fact. It's nice to have the artifact of the written letter, but it's great to have old emails too. In fact, I have an old Mac laptop, one of the early MacBooks, that I'm saving only because it has a bunch of emails from my mother on it, and I can't figure out how to get them off.
Yeah, but yeah, I was going to say I think I have at least 50,000 emails saved at my work email, but that's just because I don't delete.
Right? No, it's a bad habit. I do the same thing.
So you have a lot of emails from your mom, and is your mom still with you?
No, she's not.
Yeah, so
she's not. And you know they're not handwritten letters; they're emails. But when I look at them, I hear her voice. And I see what she was doing and what she was concerned with and what her life was like then. So, you know, even saving emails can be quite nice.
Caroline in Cornell is with us now. Hi, Caroline.
Hi, Caroline.
Hello. Good morning to you all. I have a quick suggestion for everybody who is writing an email in haste. You just mentioned that it's real common to use the wrong your. You'll use a possessive pronoun rather than the contraction.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than looking at an email as a form that needs to be filled out top to bottom, I think you should really write the email first and later add the recipients once you've actually read over the email and proofread it. Otherwise, you're inclined to hit send, and then you feel like, oh, my heavens, I knew better than that. So that's just my quick suggestion.
That is a great trick. That's a wonderful trick.
I love it, Caroline. You're right. Yeah, and especially, too, if you're writing that in anger or something like that, you know, that you wouldn't mistake, you know, just in haste to click it to somebody. Or worse yet, you're hitting reply all and you don't realize it, Laura.
Yeah, that's a big risk. That's a big risk. I really love Caroline's trick. That's terrific because it's sort of a built-in wait a second.
Right.
It's a built-in, yeah, yeah. So, well, yeah, we're all going so fast on email at work. It's good to check.
Now, with a email at work, do we have to? I mean, instead of a formal, do we have to write it in formal business letter form, or can it? Is it all right just to say, I don't know. I'm inquiring about your, you know, needs for this product. I'm a salesperson, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you have to? Are you supposed to write that in business letter form?
I don't much like the old style mm-hmm. business letter language, you know, enclosed please find per yours of October 27th.
Right.
I'm glad that's gone. But I think the tone you use in a work email depends on the relationship. Are you writing to a coworker? Are you writing to your boss? Are you writing to a current customer, a potential customer? I think you become a little more formal the less close you are to the person.
Right.
You certainly want to be courteous with everyone. And if it's a potential customer, I think you want to err on the side of being a little more formal. You can still be friendly, but certainly formal and courteous. But, you know, if you're emailing with a colleague and you're in the middle of a project during the afternoon, then you can be much more conversational.
We are talking with Laura Brown. She is the author of How to Write Anything, A Complete Guide. And we welcome your questions or examples for her at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Do you have any advice on writing for social media, Laura Brown? Should we proofread Facebook posts and tweets, for example?
I think it's a good idea because, you know, people end up... I have a friend on Facebook who posts so fast that I never understand what he's saying. I have to stare at them. And then eventually I end up just skipping them, like, I don't know what he's going to say anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a form of communication, and you do want to communicate, and you do want to show your readers, because after all, they are your readers on Facebook, that that you care. My advice is on Facebook to keep your status updates not too long, because people won't read a long paragraph. And, it is important to proofread. People are very tolerant. But yeah, it's a good idea. And also on Facebook, I think if you can keep your ranting to a minimum, something that's just happened that's made you angry, you know, don't write a whole paragraph on Facebook about it because nobody wants to read that.
Let's take a couple more calls. We have Camille in Frankfort, Michigan with us. Hi, Camille.
Hi, Camille.
Hello. Hi. I have had occasion to write and deliver three eulogies in my life. One of them was for my father, another for my sister. And now my mother is in decline, and I know that she would like for me to deliver a eulogy for her. But I don't feel like I can. I wouldn't know where to start. It's a much more complex relationship, and I just wonder, I know it's a challenging thing, but I wonder if you have any suggestions.
Yeah, I'm really sorry to hear about that. That is super hard. You know what I would do in a situation like that? First of all, is this something that you want to do in any way?
If I could, if the right words would come to me, I would do it.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel overwhelmed by it.
Right. Well, look, don't feel like you have to sum up your entire relationship with your mother in the eulogy, or that you have to somehow sum up your mother's entire life in the eulogy. It might be easier for you to pick something narrow, to pick just one memory that you have of her or one piece of information that you have about her life, and just talk about that. And people will draw inferences from that, right? If you pick something that sort of illustrates what you want to say, would that make it easier for you?
Yeah, that could. I can imagine maybe doing something like that, something that would be maybe a real good example of many other things. Yes. I mean, you know, the kind of mother she was.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, good luck, and I'm sorry, Camille, that you are faced with thinking about this right now. We're almost out of time, so let's go to Kathleen in Delafield next. Hello, Kathleen.
Hi, good morning. I was wondering if one wanted to either make posts on, say, Facebook or a blog or small community newspapers, but to be reviewing either movies or theatrical productions, how one can do that. And big movie stars don't care what you write in Wisconsin, possibly, but you're going to run into somebody that you review in the local grocery store, or do you only pick out the highlights, and it might be a character actor and totally not address, say, the leads, who, of course, got the lead because they're really good. I'm talking grade school, high school, college, and community.
Yeah, so writing reviews of local of theater productions. You might find this person at the grocery store, Laura Brown.
Mm-hmm. Well, in that case, then be super diplomatic. And I know people who write reviews who never say anything negative, but it's understood that they're selective in what they talk about. So they talk about what they really liked about the production, really liked about the show. And it's understood that the things that you're leaving out are things that you didn't really think were worth talking about. So, does that help?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, because you don't want, and I just thought, because even some of the professional productions here in the southeastern Wisconsin, it's like the rep did Assassins a few years ago, and it was just filled with cuss words, which would make it so inappropriate for kids to attend, even though it was about the assassination of presidents.
Well, I think that's a fair thing to say in a review, and I don't think that anyone should take offense
no.
if you write that. I think that you're actually serving your readers by letting people know, hey, you might not want to bring your kids to this production.
Yeah, just be aware that it's a part of the production.
Right,
yeah.
You're not insulting anyone. You're stating a fact. I think that would be helpful.
We just have a minute to go. Is there one thing that we can use right now, today, to become a better writer?
Yes. There's several things. I'm trying to pick one. I think what I would say is really honor yourself, really honor your process. Sit down and notice how you do it and what works for you, because you really can do it. A lot of people are carrying bad feelings from school and maybe from work that, oh, they can't write. Sit down and write in your own personal voice and notice how the process works for you.
Perfect. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Laura Brown, author of How to Write Anything, A Complete Guide. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster, to Christy Taylor, to Bill Martins for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. And tomorrow at this time, certified financial planner Kevin McKinley will be back for another edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.